Welcome to Zeitgeist Leadership Pulse. In this podcast, we look at the strategies and the strategic mindset leaders need to succeed and drive their businesses forward in an increasingly complex, uncertain, and digital age. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Zeitgeist Leadership Pulse. On the Zeitgeist Leadership Pulse, we really like to bring you topics and conversations around leadership and strategy. And this week, I'm delighted that we were able to get Gareth Presh, the CEO of the World Health Innovation Summit, onto the show. Gareth has many hats. He is also a member of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission and a health expert for the Sustainable Development Goals of the United Nations GSII Foundation. Fantastic conversation. I think you will really enjoy this. And there'll be lots to take away, particularly also around how we as leaders can grow. So I'm really looking forward to this conversation and I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Gareth. It's great to have you on the podcast this week. Yes, thank you so much for making time. I know you're really, really busy and you're working on a lot of super interesting things, which is why I'm excited that you're on the podcast. So for our listeners, Gareth, could you just tell us in a snapshot what you do?
Yes, and I often get asked that question. What do I do? So I am the founder, CEO of the World Health Innovation Summit. And for those of you who are not familiar with the WIS and the WIS platform, it's a platform that I created and launched in Cumbria 5 years ago, just in 2015. And with the aim to support the local health service initially to attract staff to Cumbria at the time. But it's a preventative platform looking at people's health and well-being. Very topical these days, given the impact of COVID, which shows how vulnerable our system is. Our methodology and model, which is focused on prevention of disease, has been adopted by the UN GSII Foundation, which is the foundation that was set up to implement the 17 Sustainable Development Goals around the world in cities. And that's part of my role as well. I'm the expert lead for them on SDG 3, good health and well-being. And I also have a role currently as a member of the Vatican COVID-19 Commission set up by Pope Francis. And that's looking at the future. And I'm part of group two. That's pretty much a little bit of a snapshot of who I am. I'm originally from Dublin, as you can probably tell from the accent. I have about 20 years experience in the health sector and I have two young girls and I'm married and living in Cumbria.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, I wonder how you find the time. That sounds a lot of work. That sounds like a huge amount to think about.
Absolutely it is, but I think it's like everything, it comes down to your passion. And I found my passion. I have been very, very fortunate, I believe, in my career within the health sector. When I joined the health service over 20 years ago, I just joined as a clerical officer to support the Men's C catch up at the time in Ireland. And my career just skyrocketed. I loved it. I was helping, basically going into schools, and I was at the time just taking notes around the vaccines that were being given to children at the time. And then I was asked to do a special project around estates and digitizing the entire health estate portfolio. Mm-hmm. And I managed to work with the CEO at the time, the Eastern Health Board, and I just done that project over the course of the years. And then I got into managing the health portfolio, which was, we had over, a couple of hundred properties, huge reinstatement values, and then progressed my career in health into, health promotion, acute hospitals. Mm-hmm. Then worked in haemophilia. I was the chief officer of the National Haemophilia Council. I had an advisory role into the Minister for Health in Ireland. And then we as part of a procurement group as well, we bought Factor Concentrate for the Irish state. And then I left that job and moved to the UK. And that's what has me here at the moment. But it's really down to passion. I love helping people, health related.
Yeah. I mean, if I know anything about you, you really are very passionate about your work and very passionate as a leader as well, to kind of, you know, inspire other people. We talked about that earlier, actually. You're mentioning how, you know, how your team also is really a passionate team, that they really, really enjoy what they do. Tell us a little bit more about that. So who's on your team, and, you know, who's supporting what you're doing?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really important to understand, you know, what WIS is about. It's more or less a platform, and we're all familiar with platforms. You know, we use Google and Facebook, and, you know, we're familiar with the Amazon platforms. And but what we've done with the WIS platform from a health perspective to get an understanding is we have created a platform that is about generating value, and that's also monetary value, social value. And then it's reinvested back into the community from a health aspect. So you're improving people's quality of life. You're supporting the existing health services, and the team behind that. You know, one of the biggest, you know, shall I say, this all started from a tweet. And, you know, our chairman is Dr. Amir Hannan. He's an NHS GP, and he is like one of the ones who picked up on one of my first tweets, shall we say. And then we have, you know, Ken Haird, who looks after our finance, who's based in Cumbria here. You know, we've got Dr. Manuela Boyle, Professor Paul Barish, Dr. Miriam Berger. You know, we've got Professor Leif Edvinson, David Dickinson, Pete Brooks. We've had lots of support from Sonny Cox locally here. And there's so many people, Deirdre Carberry, Steffi Singh. These are all people who are working within our network. Alexander Folks, who's been helping us with the media side of things, from Tomco, you know, Emily Dodd. And really what their passion is, my passion as well. They really want to make impact, and they see this as an opportunity. From a leadership perspective, you know, I've been fortunate as well. I work very closely with Roland Schatz. He's an exceptional leader, like, you know, talk about, you know, as a leader, stretching boundaries and how do you continuously grow. That's what I consistently learn in this position. You know, you have to be very curious, you want to connect with people, not necessarily convince them. You know, be prepared for difficult conversations. You know, you have to have courage, you know, drop the ego. Have a lot of empathy, but also show your compassion, your vulnerability. You know, make sure you're connecting with the people, with local people, with also, you know, the wider context within the team. You can understand their perspective. You know, and we're very fortunate, the people that work with us, they all have these traits. And, you know, we have to share our faults, our failures as well, you know, so that we're consistently learning. And then, you know, also, you know, leading with kindness, you know, that's another side of things as well, and understanding, that's very important. So that's a little bit of an insight into some of our team. We've got so many people around the world that actually help us in so many capacities over the last few years. You know, we've had so many events and so many activities, and so many people have actually just stepped up and helped us on this journey. You know, in Nottingham, in Carlisle, Cumbria, we've had thousands of people come through the door, and that's how we measured our impact, and that's how we came up with our value proposition. These are, you know, it's an endless number of people, and I can't thank them enough for their support.
Yes, fantastic, absolutely fantastic. You know, you touch on a few things there about leadership, and I do want to dig a little bit deeper there. So having to juggle so many things, but not just things, having to juggle the interaction with lots of people, What do you think in terms of your own leadership? You know, how have you seen that develop? I mean, you obviously have led over many years in different positions and different roles, but where do you see yourself now, and how has that come about?
Yes. Well, as I said, the roles I had in the past, although they were leadership roles, and even, you know, within the NHS, I was managing district nursing teams and, but there's a big difference in what I do now, because the difference now is really the fact that, you know, I'm responsible for finance raising. You know, the book stops with me. Whereas in the past, when I worked with the state, you know, you were given a budget every year, and that's how you run things. You know, it's a different kettle of fish, this. And this is, I would say, far more demanding in terms of your commitment levels, because the commitment on something like this is, you know, it really is. And people may not realize this, but I mean, you're talking about working maybe 18 hours a day, and in order to do that, you have to be really passionate about what you do, and I don't really see this as a job. Thankfully for me, fortunately, I see this as an opportunity to really get out there and help people on a mass scale. It has, you know, there are challenges, and I think, you know, I mentioned to you about, I was a leadership fellow at St. George's House in Windsor Castle, and I had a fascinating session with them a couple of years ago, which is around stretching as a leader. And I didn't really understand what that concept meant at the time, but I really do understand what that means now. And really, it's about pushing boundaries, you know, for yourself as well, becoming very uncomfortable in certain situations, but also, you know, trusting yourself that you can actually handle these situations. So, and looking for opportunities that may, you know, that arise, because opportunities arise all the time. It's really about, and then being focused. You have to say no to an awful lot of things. I know this may have been said many times. I know Warren Buffett has said this before about, you know, you have to say no to a lot of things. And that's very true. And I think what he means is, and people probably misunderstand this, what he means by that is you've got to be selective. And in saying no, you're not saying no to people as in you don't want to meet them or you don't want to talk to them. You're managing your time very effectively. And what that means is at times you don't go to certain things or events. You sacrifice a lot. And I mean, you know, you sacrifice, whether it be family time, which I try not to do, but you know, when I have to travel, for example, for work purposes, I do be away. Unfortunately, because of COVID, we haven't had too much travel. But you do go away for a considerable period of time, and you do miss your family. They're all sacrifices that you have to make. You also have to sacrifice at times your own health and well-being at times, because you are trying to, you know, do something for the greater good, and you believe in what you do. And what I mean by that is there's times where I go away and I like to exercise, because it's kind of part of my way of alleviating stress and pressures. And sometimes I don't get the opportunity to exercise. I normally bring my runners with me, which plays an important part. You know, I just put my trainers on and go for half an hour run or 45 minutes. But these are the sort of things that I kind of use, you know, to manage all this, because it is very diverse and it covers a lot of different domains across many, you know, different institutions and agencies and jurisdictions.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can completely agree with you. I think, you know, the thing that you said about having to say no to things. So sometimes something might look like a really good idea to someone else, and it probably is a very good idea. But as leaders, and especially if you're running a team and you're very clear on where you're going, you really do need to be purposeful. And that means that you are, as you said, going to have to say no to some things and yes, yes, yes to other things. So I think that's really a very good point. I think also your point about well-being, I know where you're coming from. So this morning I was very tempted to just get on the computer, and instead I did my run today. And it does make a difference. So we do need that balance to just kind of switch off and, you know, look after our own health. So when it comes to leadership, so you obviously talk to a lot of people. You said that, you know, you're involved with the Vatican, you're involved with the United Nations, you know, you travel, you see a lot of people, and you see a lot of leadership, probably good examples, bad examples. But overall, where do you see, you know, what's sort of the biggest leadership challenge that we might be facing, or that you have seen over the last few months?
Yeah, I think it's really risk averse, you know, there is a real danger in leadership in terms of what I would call, when people come up with a good opportunity or a good idea, there's a concept, I'm not sure if you're familiar with, called a time advantage, you know. And what that means is really that person is giving you the opportunity, as in you've got lead in time that you could take an opportunity and take advantage of that. And let me explain that in just practical terms, what that means. If you go back to, say, when Steve Jobs started in Apple, and he came to you and he said, look, you can invest in Apple. And you said at the time, well, that's, you know, it's not worth my time. I'm not going to bother there. I don't really like the concept. And then you wind the clock forward now, and someone has said, well, you had the opportunity to have a 5% stake in Apple and you didn't take it. You know, that's really where it comes from, you know, because one of the things I see, there's many opportunities out there that are put in front of people or in front of, shall we say, cities and across governments. And a lot of time they understand the concept. They get that this is a good idea and this is, you know, this is meaningful, but they don't act. Mm-hmm. And they miss opportunities. That's a real challenge, I feel, at the moment. And also from speaking to people, you know, next generation, 18 to 24-year-olds recently, I had a discussion. There's a lot of fear there in terms of they're afraid to step forward into these mm-hmm. positions or make comments and certain things. And really, fear really holds us back. These are challenges that the individual has to overcome. Mm-hmm. And then from my perspective, like, I think it's so important to identify people who are genuinely trying to make a difference or are showing those leadership traits. And then you spend time to help them, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, recently I just was asked the last couple of days, would I mentor some people from San Francisco as part of the UN network? Mm-hmm. And I said I would, you know, give some time, an hour, a month or so, in terms of a commitment. And I'm going to do one-to-one mentoring with some students. And I'm very much looking forward to that. And I think, and that's all time management, although I'm busy, but I'm still conscious that I want to be able to pass on information and knowledge. And, it, you know, I'll do that in the evening time, you know. So, you know, leadership is a big challenge, but it's also a big opportunity. And hopefully we can lead by example and encourage more leaders. I think I've mentioned to you in the past that, you know, biggest trait for me for a leader is like leaders create more leaders. You know, that's a big opportunity.
Yeah. And I think that's something that people don't understand. Sometimes I guess we have this impression that leadership, you know, you have arrived, but actually, first of all, you never arrive. And secondly, it can be cyclical in that, as you say, you pass it on. So I know, you know, we, even though we're very, you know, small business in that sense, we run something called Zeitgeist for Young Professionals, where we mentor young professionals in the marketing, PR and creative industries and just help them think through, you know, their career, what they're working on, and help them particularly think more strategically about what they're doing. So I, you know, we only do that once or twice a year, but it's enjoyable. You know, it's enjoyable to watch others grow and just that interaction. So I think if listeners on the podcast, you know, if you're in leadership positions, this is a wonderful thing to do, because actually it grows you as well as you do it.
Yeah. And leadership has changed, you know, so, you know, even, you know, when I started first, it was always like, you know, leaders, you know, you looked up to leaders as in, well, it was almost like command, you know, like they tell you what to do, you know, whereas now when I don't tell people what to do within our team, it's not up to me. It's like we're working in collaboration, we're solution focused, we're trying to embrace change, we're looking at ways and means we can collectively contribute to certain projects. And of course, when there comes a time when you have to make a decision, and this is, you know, I suppose a critical side of most businesses, it comes down to the overall leadership. You make a choice and you make a strategic decision on where you're going to go. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people may question that road, you know, it's a long road, it could be a complicated road, but ultimately it's based on, well, do I want to cut a corner here or do I want to actually deliver what I set out to deliver, mm-hmm. you know? So, because there is many ways that you can cut corners, and ultimately you may benefit in the short term, but in the long term, you will not achieve your goal.
No.
You know? So no. That's really important as well, to keep to your values.
Yeah, really important. I wanted to pick up on something you said earlier about people being risk averse and, you know, maybe having fear. I think that's a really interesting point you made there. I was thinking whether you felt that, you know, what are some of the contributing factors to that? But personally, you know, I was wondering, is COVID impacting that? Another thing is, are people potentially living in very sort of saturated lives where, you know, taking risk is not really worth it? What do you think?
Yes, I think this is where government as well need to play a role as well. And if we look at our economy, and if you look, okay, so if we just look at the COVID situation from a business perspective, we've lost 400 million jobs.
Terrible.
Right? 400 million jobs. And at the same time, the top, I think, 30 odd companies have generated nearly £100 billion in profit. Right? Now, if you look at how we've set up our society, there's something very wrong there, you know, if you have such an inequality there where you're losing so many millions of jobs. And I think that comes down to the fear, because one of the things that we have to understand is that, you know, people can take a hard road. I just explained to you there, like there is no easy roads in life. You know, it's all about the choices that you make. But if you can consist, if you stay in and you want to become an entrepreneur and you want to have your own business, it is achievable. It's just hard work. You know, it's just a lot of hard work, you know, and that's really where the challenge is. You know, if we can, and I think that's where, you know, you have to encourage entrepreneurs. And I think we should take our hats off to those people, because they are the ones ultimately that come up with these, you know, multi-billion pound companies.
Yeah,
they're the ones who take the risk. They're the one, but also they are the ones then that have to socially understand that if they have all that monetary value, shall we say, or they've created all that wealth, they need to then look at how do they redistribute that wealth through the investment portfolios. You know, that's the area that we very much are working in. That's the space, because, you know, we're actually discussing how do you invest in sustainable businesses for the future. And what we mean by that is, you know, putting in programs where we invest in companies and we work with the CEOs and we mentor them so that they have a social conscience. So when they actually are delivering profit, they give back to local communities. And that really is what the whole WISP platform is about. It's creating a model and a methodology that can be replicated for multiple businesses, because when you do good, you generate profit. You know, and this is one of the things that we're doing in terms of our investment work with the UNGSII and reports that we write around the SCR 500, which is giving investors the opportunity to see, well, if you invest in companies that do good, they actually bring you a very, very profitable return on investment, you know, over 40% over 3 years. That's the sort of numbers that we're talking about. So you can see, if you invest in those sort of companies who are doing good work in the communities, they generally are supported very well in the communities.
Yeah, and I think that's something that people sometimes misunderstand, or even obviously it's not necessarily practice yet, is that, you know, we hear a lot about social value, social impact, but still it seems like handout type of schemes. Does that make sense?
Yes.
What you're working on with, you know, with everyone that you're working with is, it really does seem so much of a better model where, as you said, you invest in good business. Good business creates opportunities within, you know, within its community, within the communities. And yet everyone in that sense wins.
Absolutely.
Including the investor, obviously.
And the reason why we are, shall we say, we're not used to that model is because it's just never been done before. Okay. And that's really where we're breaking the mold here, because what we're saying is, you know, if we were in the position where we had the profits in terms of the 100 billion, which we see ourselves in 5-10 years having that sort of capital, we will invest that money back into social good and create new jobs and meaningful jobs. And what people need to understand is there is the finance available, and the finance will always be available once the project has a value proposition, you know, and it basically, you see, you know, with the impact of COVID and how valuable our health and well-being is. So, you know, that's where the real opportunity is from our perspective, where you can create millions, literally millions of new jobs and meaningful jobs in the sector of health and well-being in prevention at scale. And so, ultimately, that leads to growth in your economy. It also leads to, you know, improving the standard of living, the quality of life. And at the same time, it helps you and your current health system, which is under immense pressure, which doesn't have enough staff and is struggling to retain staff. It helps but all parties, you know, so it's a win-win.
So maybe, Gareth, could you just give us an example? So if an investor wanted to look into this and kind of work with you, explain a little bit more how that would work. So
Yes. So, I mean, ultimately, like, I mean, we're currently working on projects, you know, at the moment with the Vatican around, you know, there's multiple projects that we have, but one of the projects is the Concerts for Humanity with Pope Francis, which is, you know, you'll hear more details about this, but ultimately, you know, the investors, you know, that we have, they finance these projects. And what I mean is these are projects on the ground. It's the same, for example, if you look at how, you know, when people invest or when the government invests into the NHS, for example, it's based on a monetary value, a return on investment for the community. So you're keeping people fit and well, you're getting people patched up and put back into the community so that they run the economy. But think of the value if the local government or the city start investing in preventative measures. Mm. And that's what I mean by opportunity. So if they have, you know, a couple of million where they want to invest in children's health and wellbeing programs, the benefit of that is enormous. Like, so, you know, I know at the moment you have, you know, details around, you know, free lunches and stuff and nutrition with Marcus Rashford, for example. Well, that's an investment for the future, because those children, remember, are the ones who will run the businesses of the future. And so if you invest in, for example, our WIS Kids program, if you put money into that, well, ultimately you're improving people's health and well-being, our children's mental health and well-being, which means then you won't have, you know, shall we say, self-harm. You won't have absenteeism from work. You'll have more resilience. So that's where the return on investment comes from. And what we do is, you know, for example, with our partners around in the cities, we're basically identifying a huge need. So in African continents, it's also you know, here is the same. You know, we if you look at locally here, you know, we're challenged with bringing staff into our local NHS. Well, we can actually invest in local community projects, which would have a greater effect. And what I mean by that, you'll offset, you know, those problems by investing in local community initiatives that improve people's health and well-being. And we've done that with the NHS. We've done that. We've proven that model. And so really, it's like if an investor, be it philanthropic, be it government agency, they can come to us or we can go to them. And if they have an idea, a concept, what we then do is we look at the value proposition from a health perspective. And that could be another example is if they're zero emission buses, if they're changing their bus fleet from diesel to zero emission buses, electrical, you know, there's a huge health impact there. So we can advise on what are the health implications there, you know, so because air pollution kills over 6 million people a year. You know, we've had a report recently around 500 premature baby deaths in the first month due to air quality. These are the sort of things that we look at, Jutta. So I'm just trying to give you a very broad idea. And they all link to all the 17 sustainable development goals.
Oh, yeah. It just sounds so fascinating to me. And I really, really enjoy talking to you. And I can just see how this is growing. You know, you and I met a couple of years back and sort of I just kind of see how it's coming together and how it's growing, how it's moving forward. So it's very exciting to see. Gareth, just to kind of finish, you know, where if people wanted to be in contact with you and find out more, which I'm sure they would like to, what's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, so our website, you know, we're WIS.UK, WHIS, that's www.WIS.UK. You can find out all the information about our programs, you know, WIS Kids, which looks at, you know, mental health and well-being in the schools, you know, WIS at Work, stress management in the workplace, WIS Seniors, falls prevention, loneliness, quality of life, WIS Green, energy, waste and water, and then our community programs. It's all about creating a circular economy as well. It's one of the most important things. And then our SDG work, you know, UNGSII Foundation, you'll find all the information about the cities. And in relation to the Vatican Commission work, if you go on to humandevelopment.va, that's the Vatican Commission's website, you'll find information about, you know, what we do there. I'm particularly involved in Group 2, which is looking to the future with creativity and preparing for the future. Mm-hmm. So that's where you'll find all our information. I'm on Twitter, at Gareth Presh, and we're on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. You know, so you can find us pretty much on all the mainstream platforms. And we have a podcast as well, which people can tune into. We stream live sessions from WIS Talk. So we've got multiple platforms that people can engage with us on. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much, Gareth. It's been brilliant to have you on the show. And I do hope that you get a few days maybe off for your own well-being, as you said. Yeah, thanks again for taking time to talk to us today.
No, it's been a pleasure, and thank you very much for having me, Jutta, and I look forward to talking again in the future.
Yeah, thank you.